Jericho and Show are actually supposed to be linked together at one point. This has been rumored in WCW in late 98. Did you know that? When Bischoff was desperate to hold on to Jericho,
okay,
when the rumor started that both of these guys actually were being courted by Titan, as it was known at the time.
Yeah.
His idea was, Bischoff's, that is, to have, you know, Giant be Jericho's bodyguard.
Okay.
Jericho vetoed it. Mm-hmm. This is according to Meltzer, I'm taking this from. Because he didn't want to be just some guy in the background in NWO Hollywood.
Okay.
And I think he just pretty much knew he was going to WWE anyway.
Right.
Which, of course, both of them obviously did.
That's right.
What would you have thought about that? Jericho and Big Show together, then the Giant, late 98 WCW.
With Jericho and the NWO? That would have been awful. Yeah.
If they had been, like, outside of the NWO spectrum, which, granted, was very difficult to be outside that sphere of influence because then you didn't get pushed, really. I think it could have worked.
Well, here's the thing.
It's funny that he wound up making Ralphus work.
I wouldn't.
If he could make Ralphus work as this tongue-in-cheek thing, having a legitimate bodyguard, I think would have worked.
Well, here's the thing. I would have preferred, ironically, what they ended up doing in Titan all those years later. Not so much the bodyguard thing, but a partnership, tag team, if you want to call it that. But I'm not a fan of somebody being pigeonholed into a bodyguard.
Yeah,
thing.
I mean, I don't know if he would have just like, I mean, right. I given what they would have had to pay him,
right.
I don't think they would have just had him stand behind Chris Jericho.
That's what
promos.
I mean. Yeah.
I don't
okay.
think they would have.
We're talking about the same thing.
I think
yeah.
they would have wrestled together as a team.
Yes. That would have been okay. Not in the NWO. But
and it would have worked nice if Goldberg hadn't been listening to the wrong people and would have done a program with Jericho.
Well, and I was rooting at the time for both of them to jump because I thought they'd be used better by that point, and they were. So it worked
funny.
Out the best.
It's funny. As much as people maybe lament how both Show and Jericho were used initially by WWE,
yeah.
they clearly were used much better than they ever were in WCW.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was inexcusable. I mean, granted, the Giant got real lazy.
Right.
Towards the end of his, I mean, real lazy, but how could you blame him with the guys he was working with on top? But Jericho, it was just inexcusable, his lack of upward mobility.
Well, here's the thing, too. We wanted them to be used even better than they were. They were used better than they were in WCW, but we saw, a lot of us smart fans at the time, that they could have been used even better than that, and I think that's where the impatience came in.
It's funny because reading the back issues of the Observer that they're mm-hmm. putting up right now, like, WWF at the time, mm-hmm. not WWE, really wanted Jericho, like, way before he debuted. Like, they're already talking in January of 99,
yeah.
which is a full 7 months before he debuts.
Mm-hmm.
Getting Jericho mm-hmm. is now priority number one because it was presumed that Paul White was already a done deal. Although it had to be tampering. I don't know how they got away with not being charged with tampering in that.
Well, priority one seems kind of steep when you consider that he'd already been a little tarnished by how they'd used him in WCW throughout the year. That's amazing.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what, I mean, Meltzer was writing it
okay.
in the January 99 issues of the Observer. People could check it out. That
right.
Yeah.
I
the
believe
number
you.
One guy that WWE wants on the WCW roster is Jericho.
I believe that.
Bischoff got Benoit to re-sign and Guerrero to re-sign and Malenko to re-sign.
Right.
Now, they'd all leave a year later anyway.
Right.
But, you know, Jericho clearly had his mind made up. And
that's
why
right.
he got de-pushed for those last couple months.
That's right.
But, you know, it all worked out for the better.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess we should get back to this show. Although I could probably have a lot more fun talking 1998, 1999 WCW.
I probably could, too.
Than 2010 WWE.
Yeah, can we just change this on the fly?
Yeah. What a frustrating. I mean, as frustrating as WWE is during this period and still is today, God, when you read about WCW in those days, you just want to bang your head against the wall. How did that company go out of business with all those stars?
Makes you wonder. Well,
how poorly can a company be run?
This is one of the trademarks of this show. I pride myself on being able to find a segue anywhere, even when you think I can't pull one out of my ass. To
we
segue
need it
back
right
to
now.
The show, I'll give you that. One of the things, one of the symptoms of WCW going under at that point in time, and if you're looking at 98, 99, that period of time there was the misuse of guys like Bret Hart, who right after the Show Jericho segment on the 2010 Royal Rumble was mentioned as being on Raw the next night as they were furthering the Vince and Bret storyline. I just segued us right back into
wow.
the show, buddy. Yep.
Wow.
No hands,
Very
Ma.
Good. No hands. Look, Ma, no hands, plancha.
And then after that, of course, that was the whole setup for the Sheamus Orton match.
Yep.
We'd already seen teases earlier in the show, these cryptic little things here, backstage segment, OMG, of Orton meeting with Cody and with DiBiase, and both of them being devious, like, I think the other guy's out to screw you over.
Yeah, so. It's interesting. Again, I when watching the show, I couldn't help but compare it to the previous year's Rumble.
Yeah.
And it's funny that for the second year in a row, the Raw title match, it was Cena-JBL
mm-hmm.
the previous year, was kind of overwhelmed by a storyline involving the challenger. Like, the fact that it was a title match was almost secondary to a competing storyline, and you just talked about it. The storyline here was the implosion, the impending implosion of Legacy, the Orton, Cody Rhodes, Ted DiBiase group, which had been booked so strong the previous year, but its goose was clearly cooked coming into 2010. And I know what you're going to bring up, and you have every right to, which is Cody and DiBiase jobbing to DX at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
That did them no favor. Once that happened, their stock just, they couldn't recover.
They got a token win back the next month, but then they had to give it back to DX again.
Yeah. So, you talked about how each of them individually, Cody and Ted,
mm-hmm.
met with Orton and said, you know, I'm here to support you in your quest for the world title, but I don't think this other guy is. And so you could see what was coming. What did you think about the direction they took this? We'll talk about Sheamus in a minute. This did them no favors, but I think given the crowd reaction, creative didn't have a choice, really, that this was just kind of a vehicle to get Orton over as a face and make, you know, Orton and DiBiase kind of look like jabrones.
Well, here's the thing, and we've talked about this before, and I've a little bit on the previous ones here, and I've tried to communicate, and I know I've talked about this with you off here, and tried to communicate my perspective, because again, as you've alluded to, this is a point in time when you were uncharacteristically checked out of the product, so you've had to kind of catch up and everything. I'm going to tell you something as somebody watching it at the time, is that I was really, really confused, because the obvious and apparent direction of the storyline, the entire way, because we talked about this as far as Sim Snuka and Manu and some of these past members of the group who Orton would take out by punting in the head. Orton was being portrayed as such an abusive, overbearing mentor towards the younger guys. The clear direction of this at the end was here's the ironic thing, and this is what's funny. The best example I can think of in terms of somebody like, I've had enough. Okay, I've had enough. I can't even believe I'm saying this, that I made this connection right now in my head with DiBiase Jr. being one of the guys in this. They were building what I thought was the DiBiase Virgil moment of where these guys just snap, turn on him, become faces. We thought that's where this was all going. Anybody watching the product.
It was, and I think they had DiBiase earmarked as the big face, because remember he was in, what movie did he do? He took
one
time
of the
off.
Marine ones, right?
Okay.
Marine 2 or some
but,
crap.
You know, and I mentioned this the previous year.
Yeah.
You know, our last mini episode where we were talking about the 09 Rumble. He just didn't have it. I mean, not to play that game, but Ted DiBiase Jr.
He was very smooth in the ring.
He was not great. He was bland.
Yeah, there was a blandness about
like
him.
Cody was way better.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Cody's got more personality, more oomph that he's able to bring to that side of the equation. But when I talk about being confused, okay, nobody at Titan Towers sent me the memo of we're turning on a dime here or whatever. So watching the product at the time, and it's just like, well, wait a minute, they've got these guys acting in a way that seems to be designed to drive some sympathy to Orton. First of all, I didn't understand the heel versus heel title match at the time. So watching it now in retrospect, going back for our product.
At some point, they clearly, going into this,
yeah,
had already made the decision, you know what, screw what we thought originally. Orton's going to be the face coming out.
Right. And that's where, and again, going into this thing, again, watching it in retrospect, 6 years later, it's like, okay, I'm watching to see what they did here. And I don't want to get ahead of ourselves by talking about what happened in the ring, but I'm going to mention this in terms of what you said about the commentary before, how bad the commentary was. That Orton was being, in any face versus face match, and we're going to talk about a face versus face match later on. Well, no, but I mean, face versus face or heel versus heel.
Okay.
In either of those dynamics. We're going to talk about this with the face versus face match later. There's always, in the face versus face, there's always a de facto heel. In a heel versus heel, there's always a de facto face. Because they don't want the crowd to be completely dead. There's supposed to be one side that you're supposed to be a shade bit more or less sympathetic to
than
the other
one. Very rarely,
I
mean, looking, if it, the only face-face 50-50 dynamic that actually worked was Hogan Warrior.
Hogan Warrior is it. That's pretty much it. Any other time...
Heel versus heel almost never works.
And this is a perfect example of why, but here's the thing. The de facto face in this match, if you want to call him that...
He was clearly the de facto face, yeah.
And then the announcers during the match were not at all sympathetic to Orton. It was just like, you know, these guys are both the biggest war criminals ever to come out of the WWE universe. They weren't, the announcing wasn't supporting the direction of the storyline. It was clumsy.
Shall we talk? So it's funny that it's so funny that at Mania it basically winds up being a handicap match. Orton versus Rhodes and DiBiase, and he just beats him.
Wasn't it technically a three-way?
But the way it was portrayed was like a handicap match.
They were
going to
team up on him, yeah. And he squashed them
Let's
both.
Talk about the other half of this heel versus heel dynamic. Sheamus. A name that we have never mentioned up until this point.
In the Royal Rumble series, you talk about a guy who got the rocket strapped to him. ECW was used as his, you know, training ground. That was where he was starting to be assimilated into the WWE universe, as I will beat that into the ground also. And then about, what, halfway through the year, later than that, a little bit, somewhere in the, by fall anyways, he gets the call up. He gets hot-shotted into that match versus Cena. I think Jesse Ventura ended up being involved in that segment somehow, of where he got picked for the match against Cena
at
TLC.
Yeah, that's right. I remember now.
Yeah.
Ventura, the theme of it was like he wanted like all new people at the top or something. And he was like, we're just going to have new people. We're not going to have the same matches. Or something. Well, I think that's what it was.
Or maybe Sheamus went backstage and told him that he was a JFK assassination conspiracy theorist.
Yes, that's why he got picked. Yeah. Yes. Or a Minnesota voter. Yeah. Although this was well after that. But, yeah, so Sheamus like kind of won that title out of nowhere. It was one of those deals where he almost had to win. It was, you know, it was kind of like what they did. They pulled the trigger with him in the manner they didn't do with Ryback against CM Punk.
Right.
A few years later, but and it was a tables match. It was they were allowed to do it because you know he could. He was put over pretty strong, like he was standing tall over Cena at the end of the tables match. But still, like it was winning a world title in a tables match is kind
of
weak.
It was presented as something of a fluke, and look, as much as humanly possible, they're going to try and give a guy like Cena, Triple H, whatever, an out where they're not actually getting pinned. It was important that Cena not get pinned, but Sheamus go over. In one way, and unfortunately, Cena being, you know, keeping some semblance of his heat, trumped putting this heat on the new guy.
And it's funny, when I read the observers from this time period, at first, the idea was to keep the title on Sheamus through Mania and have the Sheamus Triple H match be a title match.
Oh, interesting, okay.
That match clearly could have used the title more than did what wound up being the Raw title match Cena versus Batista.
Because it seemed like a throwaway. Triple H versus Sheamus.
What did you think about Sheamus here?
Well, again, he was still kind of raw. It was a situation where he wasn't completely ready for the situation he was in.
I don't feel he's necessarily like that much better right now.
No, that's true.
And when I watched this match, you know what I thought of?
What?
These are two guys who kind of have favored son status within the company.
Yes.
Even today, I mean, Orton's hurt, but whatever. Right. I mean, when he comes back, he'll be protected. And Sheamus, for the most part, is always protected. Maybe not as much as Orton, but he's protected.
Right.
And they've wrestled a good number of times.
Yeah.
they were at a good match. That doesn't really speak well to the eye for talent in this company, where two favored sons, you put them in there, and they never have a great match. They curtain jerked at SummerSlam 2015, and I remember that being okay, but it wasn't blow away.
Well, I'm down on Orton more than most people. The repetitiveness of a lot of the things in his act bothers me more
over,
than
though.
Most people. He's,
the RKO is always over. It's kind of like the modern-day DDT.
It is. But I'm just saying, as far as, you know, your mileage may vary, I'm not a Randy Orton guy. Sheamus, he's always been a guy where he's better bell-to-bell than the presentation of his character. He's a good working big man, but his character is generally pretty crappy. I'm going to get accused, I'm sure, by some people of pigeonholing everything into my pet theory, but I'm going to say this again. Lost generation. You should have had a guy in this spot that had been built up for a couple of years. Had it not been for all the failed projects of the previous 3 to 5 years, you'd have had a guy in this spot who was ready. Sheamus had to get the rocket to the moon or somebody, because you didn't have enough guys for these spots.
And I think the problem is that most fans viewed him as this just temporary pre-Mania champion that wasn't going to last. Like, everyone knew that he was not a long-term champion. It was kind of odd. And obviously, with the benefit of hindsight, you can understand that.
He wasn't even a full transitional champion.
But no, he
wasn't past February.
Yeah, and Cole... We've ripped on the announcing a lot so far, justifiably so. Cole tried here. He mentioned retiring Jamie Noble. I don't really remember that angle.
That was an angle in ECW. By the way, and I looked this up in at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, where Sheamus got pinned by Triple H. I guess that was to set up the Mania match, and then Triple H lost to Cena. Here's what's very interesting.
Nothing like building up a match for WrestleMania by having the face pin the heel.
Yeah. This is very interesting, because the next summer, in the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view, he wins the title from Cena. I legitimately don't think John Cena has ever beaten Sheamus. This is something they could go to at some point if they wanted to. I don't think Cena has ever held a win over Sheamus, and he's lost to him in two high-profile matches.
I find
matches.
That hard to believe, given three-hour Raws, that John Cena's not beating Sheamus.
I'm pretty sure. Well, the internet can go check this and fact-check us, but that's just an interesting
another
note.
Thing that, I'm sorry, did I cut
you
off?
No. I just wanted to point that out, that Sheamus has that distinction, I believe.
They also referenced Cole attacking Jerry Lawler, who certainly didn't seem very upset about that on commentary. I remember that angle. Yeah. He got brogue kicked in the face at ringside.
Yeah.
You know, if a man kicks me in the face,
yeah,
I'm probably still not going to like him. And Lawler didn't really seem to be, they didn't seem to really be playing that up.
No, they didn't, because that's all the more, matter of fact, that could have played into it in terms of trying to make Orton look a little more sympathetic against Sheamus, even having Lawler
be
like...
That makes the commentary that you spoke of
earlier awful.
Even worse.
Yes.
Like, you know, like Lawler, if anyone, should be kind of taking Orton's side,
yes.
promoting him as the face, but...
Exactly.
I mean, he wasn't at all. He was resorting, I know this is Caucasian versus Caucasian, but it doesn't really seem like that. Yes, that's how he started the match on commentary.
Well, the other thing,
talking
too,
about
like,
the varying skin pigments of the two in the match.
And it's obligatory that for Sheamus, whenever he's a heel going against John Cena, that John Cena make the obligatory glass of milk joke, like we haven't heard that 500 million times before.
Should we? What did you think of the match overall? It was a DQ finish. Weak.
So they
actually did pay off the storyline with Legacy, where an overzealous Cody Rhodes interfered and cost Randy Orton the match and caused him to go off.
Well,
on both he and then DiBiase, who runs down. And it's funny because, again, if you're just not listening to the crowd, Orton was still kind of acting heelish.
Yeah.
And I think they were just trying to get a feel for the crowd by doing this. The crowd clearly chose Orton, because he's the one who's always presented as a star, so I guess that shouldn't be a surprise.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, like, it didn't matter if, I guess, psychology-wise, Orton was still a heel. The crowd very clearly was like, we're going to cheer for Randy Orton against these two guys. And they I think their hand was kind of forced.
Here's what I have in my notes. Only sporadic, though. Only sporadic crowd heat. It wasn't constant throughout this.
Oh, no, during the match. No, I'm just saying for the post-match.
Yeah.
The post-match angle where Orton beat Rhodes and DiBiase's ass.
Right.
Orton was getting the cheers.
But then they had it where he took the brogue kick also from
Sheamus
again.
Getting his heat back. Play his music.
Yeah.
Which But still, I don't think he came out of this looking particularly strong. It just played into the fact that he was a guy holding a belt for a little bit of time.
Well, a couple things about that. First of all, again, I have in my notes again, horrible finish to convoluted match. I was not a fan of the machinations that they had in the match.
It did at least play into the storyline, I guess.
Well, let's use that word again, storyline, because a word that I've used on the show that I don't like in the context of pro wrestling or soap operas, retcon, retroactive continuity. Orton has been retconned by this point as the kindly mentor to these young guys who, in terms of, I understand that they felt they needed to change the shading of the storyline. Could we not do it in a way that rewrites history of where Orton didn't punt them in the head repeatedly and act like a dick to them all these times? You know, Orton's the kindly veteran at this point.
Well,
tough,
wait a minute.
Tough but fair.
Well, that, you mentioned that you're trying to have it both ways.
I'm not trying to have it both ways. Don't do retconning.
Well, you just bitched that the announcers weren't attempting to turn him face. I mean, earlier.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to make up things that didn't happen, though. You can do shading. You can do positioning.
I really just think that their hand was forced. I know it was a 180 midstream,
yeah,
so to speak, with where they originally wanted to go. I just think the crowd, because of the way that Orton was booked compared to Rhodes and DiBiase, whereas the one guy was a star, the two guys were just viewed as underneath guys, the crowd was going to cheer for the star.
Well,
and they just decided, all right, the guy's kind of a dick, and he treated these guys like crap, but he's the star, the other two aren't, and that's the way it's booked.
Here's the thing, though. In terms of the direction by this point, again, I might have been a little slow to get it, but for anybody watching the show, for the people in attendance at the show, and the backstage sketches were kind of hitting us over the head with it, okay? By the time of this match, in terms of the direction, okay, the crowd was picking up what they were putting down.
Well, yeah,
so we see where it's going.
Well, yeah, because Randy Orton was like just a guy who wanted to win the world title,
yeah,
and these two guys were just kind of hanger-ons. Again, it plays, yeah, into the one guy's a star, the other two aren't.
But here's the thing, though, and here's what I'm going to say about that. And that is, because I'm going to say this was maybe a 5 on the scale of 1 to 10. The two examples that I always go to in terms of the best examples of this of all time, the not-yet-official face, and about how it's always a hotter at that time. Whenever something feels like forbidden fruit in the kayfabe sense, Rock fall of 98, Triple H, late summer, early fall of 2000.
Well, Rock worked pretty well as a face when he did eventually go.
He did. But but that run from September to November, more than anything else, may have made him. Because I remember, like, with my friends at the time, and it was just like when they started putting, you know, asshole Rock, for lack of a better term, against heels, oh, my God. It was electric. Orton was no better on a scale of 5, on a scale from 1 to 10, you know, in terms of that. Orton was nowhere near where these guys were, but there was some of that dynamic.
Other than that disastrous face run in 04, he had not been a face, though.
Right.
I mean, he had actually stayed heel from 2005 through all of 09.
But we talked about this a year ago. We talked about this because he was the focus of the show. He was the focus of the 09 Rumble,
and you could see,
he won the Rumble.
And you could see him kind of becoming a face. The crowd was starting to ready to turn him, but it was a thing where, and this is something unique to the modern audience,
yeah,
they respected his level of performance.
There was that.
And I think that that was also kind of what was happening, actually, the first time, and they misread it. Because he was booked great in 04. Remember, we talked about that back then, how it was so preposterous, given what a slime ball he was booked as, that he could
incredulous.
Then be a face.
There's no way they're going to do this. I thought Meltzer was wrong.
Because the crowd, well, it's not like Meltzer was endorsing, he was just
reporting
what he thought.
But
the issue was,
I said ahead of time, it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. There's no way they're going to do this.
But the issue, because the booking generally across the board is not very good with this company, that when someone is booked well and strong, the crowd just gets behind him, whether he's a babyface or a heel.
That wasn't happening in 04. There was no spontaneous movement begging for Randy Orton to turn face.
He did get cheered against Chris Benoit in Toronto. which I know has, you know, has caused them never to go back to Toronto for a major show again.
Yeah.
But he was, watch that show. The crowd was cheering for him. And it was because he was booked well.
Toronto crowds are, a lot of times are troublemaking a-holes.
He had been, yeah,
okay?
But he had been booked.
SummerSlam 04, WrestleMania 18.
Cheered against Shelton Benjamin. He had been cheered against Edge in previous pay-per-views. People, I'm telling you, in the 2000s, guys who are booked strong get cheered, whether they could be booked as the most awful human being ever. But if they're booked strong, they get cheered.
I have said to you, the best example of that, the all-time example of that will be Triple H. You look at him like early 06 against Cena. That's why he was getting cheered against Cena, because he was booked strong and Cena was being booked to go out there and be like, I hope I can be as good as you someday, Mr. Triple H. You know, that's why
yes.
Triple H was getting cheered. So, but here's the thing. I'm going to tell you, though. You're overlooking the biggest part of this. We just talked about this with the 09 Rumble. You're overlooking the biggest part of this.
I forget things a lot.
We didn't record it that long ago. But that's...
I don't remember what I said 10 minutes ago on this show.
There's not that much Hindu Kush between when we record now and the last one here. But anyways, you're looking at a situation...
Hindu Kush. Well, never heard that term before.
I'm just pulling things out of my ass. But anyways... It's a thing where we were talking about.
Can you pull
this.
Some Hindu Kush out of your ass?
Only when I'm at the border.
Okay. Oh.
You throw it up, I slam it down. But anyways, no. It's a situation where you've got face Mr. McMahon getting booted in the head by Randy Orton.
Oh, yes.
And we're supposed to boo Randy Orton. Randy Orton was getting booked as such a badass in early 09. It was a thing, even at the time, it was like, how long are they going to be able to pull back the reins on this thing? You know, Randy Orton got
They probably should have gone. It's funny. I mean, again, though, like, I'm sticking to my story.
Okay.
I mean, look at Steve Austin or The Rock. I mean, you referenced how great it was, The Rock, as his Forbidden Fruit. And
yeah.
When, in the months leading up to their official face turns.
Yeah.
You know, Austin in 97.
Yeah.
Rock in, it wasn't. He didn't officially turn face to 99.
Right.
So it was kind of a fake out there.
I call these pseudo face
turns.
They
weren't acting like traditional baby faces.
Right.
Guys get over now by like being the most, get over as baby faces.
Right.
By being booked as really, I mean, that goes back to the 80s, like with Piper. Guys who are booked as super strong heels.
Right.
Eventually the crowd's like, hey, you know what? This guy's kind of a dick, but he's kind of cool and he's good. We're going to cheer for him now.
That was probably the part of the reasoning with turning Savage as well when they did. I mean, it's the same kind of thing.
I mean,
like, I can't boo him.
And especially now when people realize the talent, they
right.
just cheer for guys that they like.
And the only thing...
You can't fight it, and they couldn't fight it with this Orton.
Well, and we were talking off-air about Crockett 88. The only thing holding back turning Flair face was Dusty having the book. In 89, Dusty didn't have the book anymore, so Flair becomes a face, and the fans are allowed to cheer him. So you're right. This goes back to the 80s, but it's a thing with Orton where, again, part of it was we questioned it at the time, and by at the time, I mean in the last one looking at 09, of like... They're pitting him against the McMahons. I mean, what's
the
dynamic
here? Who are not sympathetic baby faces. Yes.
So the Orton thing. So it's not surprising in that sense, but they just.
And Sheamus was being booked more as a heel than Orton was during this.
He
point,
was.
Too. So
he was.
I mean, I don't have a problem if they turn Orton again. Like I said, he had been a heel for a long time. I had no problem with him going face.
So,
he's not as good as a baby face by any means.
Right.
But he's a guy, again, because he's always pushed at a certain level, the crowd tends to get behind him.
Well, and again, this match was effective for furthering the storyline, but if
the legacy storyline, it didn't really do much for Sheamus, even though, again, they played his music at the end.
Well, Sheamus got his legs cut out from underneath him the next month, really the next 2 months, if you look at him jobbing to Triple H, and then, you know, so belatedly getting his heat back at Smarkamania the next night. But it's still a thing where Sheamus... Up to that point, we can't look at it through revisionist lenses. He came out of the Royal Rumble pretty strong, and that's what we're supposed to be looking at here. Did the match serve its purpose for that? Yes, he got his legs cut out from him later on as he got de-pushed.
Okay.
But that's my sense anyways. So, but as a match, as a standalone,
it was
did
like,
I like
it? Was like
it?
Too star-ish. It was like too star-ish.
That's probably about right. Probably.
You know what was not too star-ish, would have killed to be too star-ish?
What?
This Divas title match.
Oh,
holy fuck. I know my cursing has maybe increased as we've gone on through these mini episodes, and I wish maybe I would have waited right now.
Single-handedly dragging us to NSFW status.
Yes. Because if anything deserves a string of curse words, it is Michelle McCool, Mickey James, the Piggy James storyline.
The top tier of all time of worst women's storylines. I mean, it's this.
Forget all women, including men. This is this video. Like, this is something, again, like, this was not.
This is right there with Snitsky drop kicking the baby. I mean, it's those two. Not, those are the worst two of all time.
I've admitted when we kind of started this part back before we talked about the 08 one.
Yeah.
That this was kind of, 2008 to 2010 was, my interest wasn't what it had been.
Right.
In the product in past years. So I had to be reminded of this.
Right.
That Piggy James video.
Right.
Like, you know me. I mean, maybe I'm the resident liberal here, but I generally don't get offended by things. This was borderline offensive, and probably just was plain offensive. Because what did you text me when I started bitching? Because I was watching this, and then I started texting you like a madman saying, I cannot believe how horrible this was. And you said something about, leave it to the WWE to have an anorexic do a fat story. Storyline,
well, yeah,
or something.
Because
what were your exact words? Because it summed it up perfectly.
Yeah, because here's the thing, is that I remember reading
Rick
this.
Morris in my phone.
This was
here.
A thing.
Should
of
I
where,
read your phone number live out loud on the phone?
Well, here's the thing, and I'm probably being unfair to Michelle McCool in all of this, who was just playing a part, but she is. This was reported on, I think, by Meltzer and others, that she had been, I don't know if it was hospitalized, but I've read somewhere online of health issues that people were correlating to her weight. I don't want to get sued over calling anybody anything. I'm saying, okay. I read that she had health issues related to her weight.
Gotta love an anorexic spearheading a fat-shaming angle. Those were your words via text. And I couldn't have summed up any better. And you know what makes this even more ridiculous and why this can't get any... First of all, the idea even of doing this is wrong.
Right.
But you know what makes it even stupider?
Right.
And, like, they don't get it. It's, and they, meaning the company, is so makes it so tone-deaf.
Right.
Is you do realize, and I'm speaking to the company who's not here to defend themselves, but... 99% of the guys watching this would absolutely rail Mickey James. And included in that, by the way, is your number one draw, by the way, allegedly.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. Well,
I mean, who booked this? Mrs. Cena?
Here's the thing.
Well, don't you know
not...
that joke.
All right. That was one of the... I was so quick to get my point in that I didn't even register. But yes, on retrospect, that was a good and funny point. That in I don't have a problem with the company setting appearance guidelines for divas. But what you do, you take them off TV if somebody's plumped up a little too much, whatever. And again, you try not to go to the point of giving
but
anybody
she wasn't
eating
plumped
disorder.
Up.
No.
Are
but,
you kidding me?
No. I'm not saying she was.
She looks better.
No, I don't think she was. But I'm saying I don't want to say that there's not a legitimate point for the company to make. If one of your divas, she was nowhere near a $160, but if one of your divas is like a $160, you can't be sending her out there in a skimpy outfit. I get that.
And that's
but
what this division was at the time. It was totally different.
You try to handle it in a way that's tasteful of where you're not putting an eating disorder on somebody. And by the way, and again,
I'll tell you this right now. Okay?
Go ahead.
Undertaker, all right? I'd rather fuck Mickey James than Michelle McCool.
Well, and again... By the way,
who's going to listen? Sorry, Mark, that you got to listen to that voice. Holy fuck.
I want to say, too, because I do
that
feel...
That promo she cut before this, it was like nails on the chalkboard.
I feel bad about the facetious text you read and the one I'm about to read, because I want to say that Michelle McCool, everything I've ever heard about her is that she's a nice person, and that, again, these are things that I read, and that, again, she may or may not have had some of these issues here. I also had the other text to you where I said, to Mrs. Taker, the last ride is the old stomach purge before leaving the restaurant. So I realize I'm a horrible person. I'm doing to her what they did to Mickey James in that angle. The irony is not lost on me that I'm an awful person for making a joke about
this. By the way, we've talked longer about this.
Yeah.
than the actual match goes. The 22nd match.
Yeah.
And I would have given
two wrongs do not make a right. No, I mean, me being a dick about Michelle McCool when we're railing on them being a dick about Mickie James, okay,
yeah.
It's funny, but it's not right on my part.
Yeah, but still, I would have given this negative 5 stars if it wasn't for the vicious Fez press Mickie James comes out and does on Layla,
yeah.
Who's wearing the fat suit.
Yeah.
I mean, she killed her half dead with that Fez press. It was a lot better than some of those weak Fez presses Austin was doing at the end.
Yeah, and you wonder how much shoot was in that, yeah. As far as her laying into her with that. Did you ever see I think it was part of the video package, wasn't it? I mean, it was the thing on SmackDown of where the Piggy James, and they put the... I mean, it was one of the legitimately most humiliating segments they've ever done to anybody.
The video was so bad.
Right,
well, where they had, like, her in front of a cartoon, Piggy James. People need to watch this if they forgot it.
Be a star indeed, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. My eyes were coming out of my head where they were doing, like, you know, this Piggy... They were, like, taking off, like, this Piggy goes to market or something, weren't they? I mean, God.
Yeah.
You know, in their mind... The payoff here, Mickey going over and smashing a cake in Michelle McCool's face.
That doesn't begin to make it right.
No, that does not justify this angle.
No,
This was, again, it's not quite negative 5 stars, but it's heavy in the negative stars.
And this, again, not the right kind of heat. And it's a thing, too, of today.
And the announcers were, like, laughing.
Well,
they were laughing at the heel jokes.
Yeah, they were laughing at that. And again, it's a thing of where, and this is one of the things Meltzer talks about a lot, is... heat on the performers, heat on the company. This is so bad. You weren't even getting heat on the performers. The crowd and the TV audience was heat on the promotion, because it was like, how can you do this to one of your performers? How can
and
you?
And it's so tone deaf.
I mean,
I mean, one, if she was actually fat, which she wasn't, that's pretty mean to do to somebody. And it's just stupid when you're doing it to someone who, again, 99% of your audience would give their left nut to slip it in Mickie James.
She's hot, but that seems like a slight exaggeration. But anyways.
What? Who watching this? You're telling me any dude in that crowd, all right, if would not sleep with Mickie James.
Oh, I mean, clearly, anybody that's, you know, unencumbered and in a position to do so, yeah, I don't know.
Your left nut is giving a lot, but
language,
you know what I'm saying.
It seemed a bit exaggerated, but no, I agree with
the
general
speech.
All right, I agree with the general gist of that. But here's the thing also, too. In terms of the wrong kind of heat, the only thing that comes
to
my mind...
God, is that video bad. Now I'm thinking about it again.
The only thing that comes to my mind... And as far as a parallel, and you'd have to imagine a situation where, because again, Mickey, of course, wasn't the booker, didn't willingly go along with this. I mean, she went along with this as a performer, but I'm sure none of this was her idea. The only other thing I can ever think of that is as bad as this is something that somebody booked for themselves to be in the middle of. 1985, new WWE Hall of Famers, the Fabulous Freebirds, coming out on Florida TV. After Eddie Graham killed himself, and doing an angle where new booker Mike Graham was out there. Yeah, your old man was a loser, and they beat the crap out of him 3-on-1. This is right up there with that segment in my mind as far as the wrong kind of heat.
Oh, man.
Is that, I mean, do you see a parallel?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just reacting to, oh, my God, I forgot about that angle.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember from the After Mags at the time, Kyle.
Oh, boy.
And that was... Bill Apter was never going to break kayfabe and say Mike Graham is a dick for doing this, but it was clear that he didn't like what the Florida promotion did putting that on the air.
Yeah, that's just like sad to think about, too, when you think about how Mike Graham ended up, too.
Well, yeah.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.